Good for this time of year. Now, tonight at 7, there's a lot happening folk music-wise tonight, and at 7 o'clock at the Wilkins School Community Center, which is on Charleston Avenue in Regent Square, there is going to be a chance to hear the person who you are about to hear here. Now, have you ever heard a resonator-style ukulele? I have not, and you're about to hear one. But this gentleman also plays banjo and guitar and writes poetry and plays music in a lot of different styles. He hails from Milwaukee, if memory serves, and we'll get a chance to get to know him a little bit better throughout the next hour. But our live music now begins on SLB with Little Rev.
So go the year, round and round, 1 foot, 2 foot, out and down. If I am poorly, all my troubles abound. Would you call yourself friend when the morning came around? Polly put the kettle on, I'm coming home. Tell old sister Kate, Bill Bailey dead and gone. Old Black Joe, he keepin' on. So go the year, round and round, playboy. So go the years, round and round, 1 foot, 2 foot, out and down. If I am poorly, how my troubles abound. Would you call yourself friend when the morning came around? Suki, take it off again, chewing on the old jawbone. Way back yonder when my bell invented the phone. If you still want me, Lord, I'm tired of being alone. So go the year, round and round, come on now.
At the Saturday Light Brigade. That's a nice song. Where did that song come from?
Thank you. Well, that's a song off of my last CD called the title of the record's called The Happiest Way to Be Sad. And it's just a collection of original tunes. And I spent a better part of a year kind of researching and really looking at a lot of old Broadway music. It's kind of a fascination of mine. I do a show called The Jews of Tin Pan Alley, a lot of performing arts centers and cultural arts centers. So really what I wanted to do is I wanted to get into the heart of Irving Berlin and George Gershwin and Cole Porter and all the great songwriters of the 20s and 30s. And then I wanted to sort of filter that through my folk sensibilities. I mean, I grew up a folkie in Milwaukee, and all my heroes were working class, you know, acoustic guitar strummers and early blues and jazz and ragtime and all that kind of Americana root stuff. So really the goal with Happiest Way to Be Sad was to take what was already there sort of in my heart and in my musical soul and really filter it through that Broadway prism and see what would happen if I could write, you know, a whole record's worth of tunes with a little bit of that tip of the hat to that tradition. So, like, the chord changes and the structures that that generation of songwriters use were in many ways often typical, but the soul and the lyricism that went into a great song like, you know, On the Sunny Side of the Street or Ain't Misbehaving or I Can't Give You Anything But Love, Baby, or, you know, and even Brother, Can You Spare a Dime for that matter, mm-hmm. you know? So I wanted to kind of try and tap into that muse and see what would come out. And so I wound up with a whole record, and it's called Happiest Way to Be Sad. That tune is called So Go the Years, and just as kind of an odd reflection of losing a lot of people in a very short short time in my life. And
so when did the ukulele choose you, or vice versa?
Well, I actually wrote a poem called, you know, it's got that line that you don't choose the uke, the uke chooses you.
Really? I did not. You know, I have your book.
Yeah, if you find it in there at some point, I'll read it for you if you like.
That's funny because I did not see that. But,
yeah, no, that's cool. Everything about the ukulele is serendipitous in my life. In the early 90s, a fan of mine, I was playing a little Irish pub on Friday night, and fellow, one of my fans came in, gave me an old beat up banjo ukulele, and that kind of changed my life. Nobody in Milwaukee wanted to have anything to do with the ukulele in the early 90s. It wasn't cool. You know, these days it's hip. Like, all the high school kids are playing ukulele, college, you know. You hear it on all the commercials, all the sitcoms, right? You hear that lilting, happy sound of the ukulele. But I'm telling you, man, when I started, nobody wanted to have anything to do with the ukulele, and you were an island unto yourself. And not only that, there was very few people, very few resources. The internet, MTV, I should say the U2 era hadn't hadn't entered, and you couldn't go on YouTube and, you know, learn stuff from lots of other people like you can today. If you wanted to learn something about the ukulele, you really had to seek out hard to try and find the old timers who were still playing the ukulele in old styles if you were interested in tradition of any sort. So that someone gave me a ukulele, it sort of found me, kind of like you implied. You know, and the rest, the same thing. I started writing instructional books for Hal Leonard, which is a music corporation based in Milwaukee. You know, and I happened to be in the same town of this company. I happened to be someone who could read and write music, and I quit my job as a grade school music teacher to write ukulele books. So.
Well, I'm glad that happened and came to pass. Why don't we listen to another song?
Sure.
What would you like to do next?
Sure. The first ukulele I played was a little resonator concert-size ukulele, and now I'm going to pick up one that's just a little bit bigger, so it's got, you know, I don't know if this transfers over the air or not, but now I'm going to play what's called a tenor-size ukulele.
And this one's tuned a little differently?
This one's just tuned down a whole step. The first one was in what's called detuning, which was very popular in the 20s, and when the Hawaiians brought the ukulele over to the mainland here in the teens and 20s, that's what everybody was playing in, A, D, F sharp, B. And if you look at the old sheet music in your piano bench or up in your attic, it'll say, if it has got ukulele chords on it, it's probably going to say A, D, F sharp, B. Mm-hmm. And somewhere along the way, we transitioned to the C tuning here on the mainland. And I was just in Nova Scotia. They play in D tuning up there. So go figure, right? Most of the world plays in this C tuning. And so I'll do one for you. This time, I'm going to do a little instrumental piece for you. And this is called Tiny Tim's Rag, and as a tip of the hat to Tiny Tim, if you're interested in the spiel, we can talk about it after I play the tune. But it has, you know, it's got a connection to Tiny Tim. So here we go. This is really a short piece. Thank you.
I liked it a lot. Now, I have to ask you, and I'm not sure I can describe it very well, but there's sort of a double strum trilling that you were doing where I think it's almost a flamenco style.
Yes.
That I don't think I've heard anybody play the ukulele quite like that before, and that's pretty, it looks like it's pretty hard to do, or at least to master.
Yeah.
Tell me about that style.
Well, I'm glad you asked that noticed that. A lot of people pick up on the rhythmic nuance of the ukulele. It's really what attracts people to the instrument because it's got this, you know, driving, incessant rhythm. And if nothing else, people hear this. And it makes them feel good, you know, makes them want to tap their toes. And it's a great instrument for songwriters and all this stuff. But the one thing it has going is that it has this tradition of right-hand techniques that are just out of this world. And they sound killer, right, on this instrument.
Yeah.
So if you take the time to learn them, and it's actually the reason why I'm here in town, because I'm here to teach a class called Essential Strums and Strokes for Ukulele this afternoon at 1:30.
That sounds like a Hal Leonard book.
Well, it will be. It will be. So, but so what I was doing was it had a triplet feel, and the ukulele, this is a synonymous stroke with the ukulele. So you'll hear ukulele players do this kind of thing. I'll play a little bit of Freight Train Runs So Fast. Okay,
okay.
So if you hear someone pick that on the guitar, it would sound like this, right? They go.
So fast, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now a ukulele player who takes the time to learn the right hand stuff might go like this. That's just one way to do it. So that's called a triple strum, a two-finger triple strum. And that's the kind of stuff that I teach people how to make that sound. So if you come to my class, I'll teach you how to do it in turtle time, where we go one, two, three, one, two, three, that sort of thing. And then eventually we get it going like a freight train, you know? So there's all different ways to do this. And they get fancier, depending on your ability. Okay? So that's the stuff that I fell in love with early on in my evolution as a ukulele player, was those kind of rhythmic, nuanced sort of things that really attracted me. Because anyone can learn the left hand, and anyone can learn how to play a little scale, and can learn how eventually, whatever you want to do. You know, I don't know what you want to play. You know, so it depends what you like, but anyone can learn the melodic stuff, whether you're finger picking or strumming or playing individual notes. Anyone can learn that kind of stuff, but what anyone can't learn is what happens with the right hand. And what you picked up on, the triple strum, is really what I spend the most time teaching. It's what most people want me to teach, even though I've got 15 different workshops that I can offer as I travel around North America. Because I fell in love with this stuff, and at that time, all these old-timers were still alive. The Bill Tapias of the world, the Travis Harrelsons, they're names that don't mean much to your average general listening public, but if you get into the world of the ukulele in America, they're huge, monumental, you know, they're monsters of the ukulele. And early on, I would sit in these guys' living rooms and try to learn from them, and they wouldn't say, take out your iPhone and turn on record. You know, they wouldn't say, let's make a YouTube video. You'd watch them, and if you were lucky and if you were polite and you got to know them, you'd say, could you tell me how you did that? But mostly you just had to watch and learn, you know. And I wouldn't trade that for anything, because you can go to YouTube and learn a lot, but it's a human connection that we have, especially with our elders, that is really important in this you know, musical journey of ours.
Now, Tiny Tim's Rag, I think you called it, is an homage to Tiny Tim. Was Tiny Tim a good ukulele player?
Man, you are asking all the right questions this morning, dude.
Good.
I've been at this for a while.
Yeah, so. Good. You're asking all the right questions. Tiny Tim, look, I'm not going to say anything negative about Tiny Tim. All I will tell you is this, is that after hanging out in Greenwich Village with the likes of Dave Van Ronk and that whole, you know, Bob Dylan, that whole scene, right? Tiny Tim was part of all that. A lot of people don't talk about that. Walking around Greenwich Village with a ukulele and a little grocery bag. Eventually, he'd go on Laughing. Right. Eventually, he'd get married on the Johnny Carson show. So we're talking 68, 69, right?
Mm-hmm.
Put that in perspective. Vietnam, Martin Luther King, civil rights, right? A lot of stuff going on in this country. Tiny Tim came along at the right time. We needed somebody that we could either A, laugh at, or laugh with. And he was a good, you know, spoof for that. And he knew it. And he played it up. It was a shtick. It was a novelty. And he played that up. He was not a, he was a remedial ukulele player at best. Mediocre at best. That is not a criticism. He was a music historian par excellence. He knew every old song.
Yeah, he did not. And I was curious about it because Jack Benny is a good example of somebody who really could play the violin quite well, but typically did not. And my take on Tiny Tim was the persona and the act that he developed worked great, and that he was probably competent on the ukulele, but not one that was about to lead a workshop, as you are, not to put you in that position to compare yourselves, but I mean, he used the tone and the personality and the power of the instrument to make people smile. And the other, I think, most famous ukulele player in this country is Arthur Godfrey, right? And my suspicion is that he was probably also a, you know, competent is the word that comes to mind. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Arthur Godfrey played a large size, which is a baritone size ukulele, and yeah, he was competent. Look, the ukulele has this great equalizer.
Yes.
Amongst players, because all you need to do is learn a couple of chords and make your right hand go down and up, and you can strum. You know, and once you learn a couple of chords, you can accompany yourself. And if you don't want to be heard, you can find other like-minded individuals in these ukulele clubs and meetups all over the country, which I find myself traveling to and fro. And pretty soon you're making music, and that's a really empowering thing, you know. It's like when punk rock, you know, started to catch on amongst guitar players who realized if they learned three chords, you know, it didn't have to be about your musical prowess. However, the ukulele instructors who are pros and performers out on the scene today are pushing the envelope of this instrument beyond what anyone had ever expected, instrumentally and for that matter, rhythmically and sonically. And I mean, look at Jake Shimabukuro and, you know, Brittany Paiva and Herb Oda and James Hill, and names that might not mean much to your listeners, as I said earlier, but those of us who travel in this community, these are people who are just defying the expectations of what could come out of this tiny little four-string box.
What's is the origin of the ukulele Hawaii or?
Yeah, the Portuguese brought it to Hawaii.
Okay.
Yeah, and what eventually developed in Hawaii that we know as the ukulele was really derivative of Portuguese instrumentation. And, it was one of these things where people were coming to work on the sugar plantations and it was a recession in Portugal, and so a lot of the workers came. And there were many folks who had other skills, including woodworkers and, cabinet makers and instrument builders. So they wound up working with the koa wood of Hawaii, and the rest is history after the Panama Pacific Exposition in the early teens, where Hawaiian music was brought over the mainland and just took off.
Listener just wrote with a question to ask you, but before doing that, why don't we listen to some more music?
Sure. Okay. Give me another one on the ukulele here. And so a lot of, I did an original song. I did a little instrumental thing. I like to also play a lot of traditional stuff too. So I'll play a little bit of a song off my newest record, which is called The Fountain of Youth 10th Anniversary album. And it's a pairing of some older favorites off of some earlier records that I discontinued. I just made them digital, and about 10 new tracks as well. So this is an example of more traditional piece from the early country and hillbilly repertoire. And what you'll hear me do after I get done strumming is you'll hear me play the ukulele kind of like a banjo, which makes this kind of a novelty. I'll play in a claw hammer kind of style that an old-timey banjo player would do, and it's that kind of a stroke. So when you hear at the end of the tune where it starts to change, your listeners are going to hear me doing this kind of banjo stroke on the ukulele. But it starts out to be a highly rhythmic kind of tune, and it's called Reedlin' and a Rockin'. Okay, here we go. Reedlin' and a rockin', I'm bound to go. Reedlin' and a rockin', I'm bound to go. Reedlin' and a rockin', I'm bound to go. Oh, fare thee well. Them golden slippers I'm bound to wear. Golden slippers I'm... Golden slippers I'm bound to wear. Oh, fare thee well. Reedlin' and a rockin', I'm bound to go. Reedlin' and a rockin', I'm bound to go. Reedlin' and a rockin', I'm bound to go. Oh, fare thee well. Now that line right there, when I have an audience in front of me, I'm usually asking them to sing that along with me, that reeling and a rocking part. But I can't see my audience right now. All I can do is hope that they like to sing along. Whoever may be out there in the city and hearing this right now, that's going to be your part, and I hope you'll sing it next time it rolls along. That high paper collar I'm bound to wear. High paper collar I'm bound to wear. High paper collar I'm bound to wear. Oh, fare thee well. Here we go now. Reedlin' and a rockin' I'm bound to go. Reedlin' and a rockin' I'm... Reedlin' and a rockin' I'm bound to go. Oh, fare thee well. So I went down to the library downtown Milwaukee, our main library, and I walked in there. And my goal was to find out what they were singing about in this song, because if you listen to it, you'll hear words like the high paper collar. I mean, what the heck is a high paper collar? I didn't know. And they'll say things like the frock-tailed coat, the stovepipe hat. And I thought, man, there's got to be pictures of this stuff. So I walked in there and I went up to the librarian and I said, jokingly, actually, I said, any chance you got a 1909 Sears and Roebuck replica catalog I might look at? And she let out a shrill laugh that had all the heads in the library turning to look at her and almost going, shh. I mean, that's something when someone gets to tell the librarian to quiet down, you know? But I wanted to ask her, you know, what was so funny. She said, how did you know that's exactly what we had in our reference section? I said, I didn't. I was just taking a guess. She goes, well, she pulled it out, and I looked at it, and I could see it was high fashion from a long time ago. So I encourage all you antiquers to find yourself a stovepipe hat, a frock-tailed coat, some golden slippers. Of course, get yourself a ukulele, and then strum as you walk around the neighborhood and see how long it takes before the cops pull you over. What are you doing there? Reedlin' and a rockin', I'm bound to go. Reedlin' and a rockin', I'm bound to go. Reedlin' and a rockin', I'm bound to go. Oh, fare thee well. Look out now. Here we go now.
Wow, the claw hammer banjo meets the ukulele. That's amazing. Really well done. I know you've got other instruments here, too, and that's up to you whether you want to bring them out
sure.
or not. The question was about Izzy. Izzy from Hawaii, who does Somewhere Over the Rainbow, is probably his best-known song. Do you know much about him and his background?
Well, I could never call myself an authority. All I could do is say that, you know, he was an important part of this whole revival that sort of swept itself across America and the world. And I mean, how could you deny that sort of otherworldly, heavenly voice that just kind of transported all of us? It was really his own version of that song, much like Tiny Tim took Tiptoe Through the Tulips. Mm-hmm. I know those aren't good analogies because no one heard Tiptoe Through the Tulips and was, you know, was thinking, wow, I could sit in a meditative posture right now.
No. But
Somewhere Over the Rainbow was a tune that people wanted played at their weddings, and they, you know, just this beautiful version that could transport you to a really good place. And we all need to be in a really good place, you know? So that took off, and that was his magnum opus, just, you know, strumming his own way Somewhere Over the Rainbow, you know, nice strong Hawaiian right hand strum, again, great repertoire of stuff, but it was that voice.
Yeah. That's a good point, actually. The mellowness of his voice, but it really suited the instrument too, I think. The two together. If you're just joining us, this is Lil Rev, who is in Pittsburgh. We're lucky to have him here this weekend. He's going to be at the Wilkins School Community Center tonight at 7 o'clock. The show runs until 9, and he'll be performing. And the Wilkins School Community Center is in Regent Square. There's a link at slbradio.org if you want to learn more about what he does. Have you been to Pittsburgh before?
I have been through Pittsburgh.
Through
I have
Pittsburgh.
Not been to Pittsburgh.
Well, let's hope you're not through with Pittsburgh, because I think a lot of folks will enjoy your show tonight. Now, you've got a guitar and a harmonica on now.
Yeah, so I started out on the guitar. Generally, when you would come to a town like Pittsburgh I'm working with the Steel City Euchres tonight, so I'll teach this afternoon, I'll play tonight. It's a ukulele club, so if you come to my show tonight, you're going to hear like 98% ukulele. Most of the show, that's what they want to hear. That's what they brought me here for. I may pick up the guitar for one song, or the banjo for one song, or the harmonica for one song, but mostly my show tonight will be ukulele on baritone, concert, tenor, and a bunch of other variety of instruments. But I started out on the guitar. And I thought I'd sing this song that is a parody of an old ballad called The Banks of the Ohio. A friend of mine rewrote the words to this. His name is Larry Penn. He's sort of one of my heroes.
Songwriter.
Yeah, one of my heroes. And
great. He wrote I'm a Little Cookie.
I'm a Little Cookie, yeah.
Among other things.
Yep.
Yeah.
So he's a Milwaukeean, and we made a record together. I'll leave it here with you. And that's the guy who's been one of the biggest influences on my musical evolution. And it says Larry Penn. He's now almost 90. We're still performing together. We got a show coming up in about a week here. And, you know, he's moving slowly, but he's still out there doing it. And God bless him. May we all find ourselves continue to do what we love, even as we feel like we can't go on much further, you know. So anyways, this is Larry Penn's lyrical version of the old melody, Banks of the Ohio. And Pittsburgh is a steel town, and it'll always have that history wrapped up in it, no matter whether it's producing it just kind of keeping alive the spirit of that. Milwaukee, Detroit, Chicago, Pittsburgh, Columbus, all these different towns were part of this triangle of steel manufacturing. And we all know what happened in the 1970s, right? Things started to change. So this talks about that change, and goes like this. My son, take a walk, just a walk, a little way down beside where the steel mills grow, down on the banks of the Ohio. Erectus sets
are not mere toys, but training tools for girls and boys who dream their dreams of futures bold down on the banks of the Ohio. Now the mills went up on the banks of sand, and the steel went out and built this land. Workers joined that CIO down on the banks of the Ohio. While we worked to build their plans, new mills were built in foreign lands. Left us here with idle hands down on the banks of the Ohio. Now the age of steel, it's a come and gone. Left us here to sing this song. Round rusting mills and a slag pile's coal down on the banks of the Ohio. All right.
That's beautifully done, and you're only about 1,500 feet or so from the Ohio River right now, so it's good to have you play that. I don't know if you have time for one more or not. I know you've got a workshop coming up at noon, so I want to be careful time-wise with you. We could have you here all day. For Lil Rev online, we've linked to his website if you want to go there, and he's has CDs as well as books available. Book available, I think, right? On poetry, so you can go to his website to learn more. I'll give you the website, or Lil Rev can. Is it?
Yeah, lilrev.com, LILREV.com. I also have a blog for ukulele. People are interested in ukulele called The Fountain of Uke at blogspot.com, Fountain of Uke. If you Google that, it'll come up. I mostly write on a lot of American roots music history, but there's a lot of ukulele-related things too, Fountain of Uke, and lilrev.com. My store, people can find all my music. It's a hard copy for sale and downloadable. I'm also on CD Baby, and I want to thank the Steel City Ukers for really being the impetus for getting me here, and thank you guys for having me on the air today. I'll finish out with a little short one on the mouth organ. And this is really the first instrument that I heard. My grandpa played harmonica, so I grew up hearing this since I was a little baby. And as long as we're talking about steel, I'm going to take you guys on out with a tune called The Wisconsin Central. It's my own sort of rendition of making the harmonica sound like a train. So we're gonna go on out onto that long steel rail. And it sounds like this. Aboard. Bye.
Leo Rev, thank you for being here with us. Look at that little boy out there looking at you. It's 8 before noon at the Saturday Light Brigade. Look for him tonight. Wilkins School Community Center, 7 to 9.